We're doing Shoftim, and we're up to the 16th chapter. We were learning about Shimshon, that tremendous warrior, with his broad shoulders and his crippled feet, and his guerrilla warfare against the Philistines, the Pelishtim. And we had seen how he was living with this woman whose name was Delilah, and she kept pestering him to give away how, in what is the secret behind his strength, which in essence also means how he can be weakened. And she kept saying, if you'd really love me, you tell me your deepest secrets. If you'd really love me, you tell me. And day after day after day after day, she pestered him. And she drove him mad. Reached a point where he was really, really fed up with life. And it's interesting that we're talking about a person who was a great sage. Chazal tells he was one of the greatest judges that ever lived amongst the Jewish people. Quite possibly the best judge we ever had. He is the one judge who is compared to God in judgment. That he could judge single-handedly. He could really discern what was true and what was lie. He could really judge well. He was a huge Talmid Chacham. And he was given a special godly blessing of strength. And yet this woman could bring him down to his knees with her pestering. Tells us something. So he tells her. He tells her, I have never had my hair cut. I have been separated for God from my mother's womb. If I were shaved, I would lose my strength. I'd become ill. And I'd become like anyone else. So he used God's name, and she knew he was a holy person. He wouldn't have used God's name in vain. He said, I've been separated for God. And he also, when a person tells the truth, you could tell they're telling the truth. So she calls the leaders of the Philistines. They had promised her to each pay you up if she got the secret. They brought her the money. She put him to sleep. She called the man in, and she shaved off his 7 locks of hair. And she started teasing him and afflicting him. And she said, the Philistines are here, Shimshon. So he got up, and he didn't realize that he didn't have the hair on his head. And he thought he'd take them all on. But he didn't have the strength he had previously. And they grabbed him, and they gorged his eyes out. And they took him down to Aza, which is where he started going downhill. And they put him in chains, and they gave him a job to turn a mill in jail. He'd do an animal's job, pushing a mill. And his hair started growing again. Now, the officers of Plishtim, they figured if we won Shimshon, then it must be our idol, Dagon, that mermaid, half human, half fish. That must be what gave us this victory over Shimshon. Now, if we look into it, Shimshon said, my strength stems from the fact that I was separated for God from my mother's womb. And if I would have my hair shaven, then God would leave me. But that doesn't interest anyone. The fact that the Philistines have taken him into captivity, in their mind that means their God has won. If you think about it, the logic in that claim is pretty faulty. But that doesn't interest anyone. Shimshon is in their hands, so they make a party in honor of their God, Dagon. And they bring mass of people to this party, and they see in a distance the jail where Shimshon is standing there pushing a mill. And they start praising their God. They say, look, our God gave our enemy, the guy who destroyed the land. Remember, Shimshon wreaked havoc in Philistine territory. He burnt their crops. There were a lot of people that were pretty happy that Shimshon was finally captured. So they're all drinking and joking, and they say, let's call Shimshon in. We'll ask him to tell some of the stories of his bravery, how he used to overcome the Philistines. And they bring Shimshon before them, and he does his job. He starts joking. He tells them, Yeah, well, this time I overtook the Philistines like this, and that time like that. And they stand him up between the two pillars that the house is resting upon. Now, this Colosseum had a huge roof, and there were many spectators on the roof, and there were many people inside the Colosseum looking on at Shimshon. And Shimshon, being that his eyes were gorged out, he couldn't see where he was going. So there was a lad who was leading him around, and he asked the lad, please lead me to the pillars that the whole house is resting upon, and let me lean on them. Now the house was filled with men and women, and all the leaders of Philistine were there. Just on the rooftop alone were 3,000 people. And Shimshon called to Hashem and he said, Hashem, please remember and strengthen me this one time. Let me take revenge from one of my eyes from the Philistines. And he wrapped his hands around the pillars, and one his right hand over one pillar, his left hand over the other pillar. And Shimshon said, let me die together with the Philistines. And he applied his strength, and the house fell on the leaders, on the nation, and he killed more people in so dying than he had throughout his life. His brothers, his family members came and carried his body, and they buried him next to his father's grave in the territory of Dan. And he had judged the Jews for 20 years. Years after his death, the Philistines were still trembling, because they were scared, maybe he's still around, maybe he's still coming back. The Philistines will think that they've had their last laugh when they have their giant, namely Goliath. That's when the Philistines think, ah, now we can get back at the Jews, we have our giant. Shimshon said, God, let me avenge one of my eyes. What about his other eye? They gorged out both eyes. So Chazal say, the other eye, he said, that I still want the merits in the world to come. And I think there's a very deep message here. On the one end, Chazal tell us that Shimshon deserved to have his eyes gorged out. He sinned with his eyes. He married a non-Jewish woman because he was attracted with his eyes. Even though God had directed him to marry a non-Jewish woman, there was an aspect where he was too enticed by what he saw with his eyes. It should have been done in a purer way. And so Chazal say that's why his eyes were gorged out. So one would think, if he deserved that, what merit is there for him? He got what he deserved. And yet here we see that he had such great merits that in the merit of one eye that was gorged out by the enemies, he was able to bring down the house, kill thousands of Philistines, and avenge one eye. The other eye, he says, I have the merits waiting in the world to come. I think that's something to think about for any parent or relative or friend who, God forbid, loses a relative or a friend at war against the enemy. So we can learn from Shimshon how great are the wages for one who gets hurt by the enemy, even if he deserved it. Because Shimshon, Chazal say, deserved it. There was a reason why he got his eyes gorged out. And nonetheless, Chazal say, he had great wages waiting for him for that eye. The Navi continues and tells us a story, the famous story of Pesel Micha, the idol that was in the house of Micha. And the story begins with a woman who had 1,100 silver coins stolen from her. And she suspects her son Micha, who's no child, he already has kids of his own, and she suspects that he's the one that stole it. And she says, I curse whoever stole that money. And the story begins with Micha coming to his mother and saying, you know that money that was stolen from you and you cursed whoever took it? I took it. So she says, you should be blessed. I don't want the curse to come true about you. I want you to be blessed, my son. And he gives her back the money. And she says, you know, I took a vow that that money should be set aside for you, my son. We'll make it into an idol. We'll make it into some kind of figurine that could bring down godly powers. So I'll give it back to you. And he had a temple in his house, in his property. He had a temple, and the temple didn't have any figurine. So he gives the money back to his mother, and his mother takes it to a silversmith. She pays him 200 silver coins, and she gives him the other 900 to make into some kind of molten figure that can capture forces from above. That's done in the set time when the stars are in a set position, and it would have some kind of powers, or at least that's what they believed. And they erect it in Micha's house, in his temple. Now, Micha takes his own money, and he pays for special clothing and special human figurines, human idols, and he appoints one of his children to be the priest in this temple. Now, we have a Jew who has set up a temple for idol worship in his home, and if he set up a temple, obviously people are coming, and no one's doing anything about it. So the Navi points out to us that in those days there was no king, seemingly indicating had there been a king, he wouldn't have gotten away with this. Micha has a visitor. And here we see that Micha was always taking in guests. And Chazal tell us that because of this midah of achnasas orchim, because he was frequently taking in guests, he lasted a long time, Micha, in spite of his sin. This gives us an insight as to how great the mitzvah of achnasas orchim is. Chazal tell us that the mitzvah of achnasas orchim, one of the wages is that a person who can't have children does. Micha has a visitor who's a Levi. And this Levi lived among the tribe of Yehuda. We know the Levites were scattered. The Levites were scattered throughout the different tribes. This Levi, he lived among the tribe of Yehuda from Beis Lechem. Now, there were two cities, Beis Lechem. There was a Beis Lechem in the section of Zvulun, and there was a Beis Lechem in the section of Yehuda. That's why whenever it's the famous Beis Lechem from the tribe of Yehuda, the Navi stresses this is the Beis Lechem of Yehuda. And this Levi was looking for a place to live, a place to do his teachings. And this Levi, he liked money. He lived a very long life, and he was always in it for the money. So Micha interviews him, and it turns out that this Levi was the grandson of Moshe Rabbeinu. His name was Yonasan, the son of Gershom, the son of Moshe. The Navi doesn't overtly reveal this. At the very end of the story, the Navi tells us he was Yonasan, the son of Gershom, the son of Menashe. The Navi adds in a Nun, but the Nun isn't written directly in the line, and we have on tradition that the Navi was like covering up for Moshe. We have on tradition it was Moshe, but being that this is what happened with his grandson, so the Navi wrote it a little differently. The Nun is like a hanging Nun. It's not a regular Nun, and we have on tradition it's really Moshe, but we don't want to say that. So Micha sees he's gotten a fine Levi, and the Torah instructs us that the Levim should really be the one serving in the temple. So Micha wants to hire him. He tells him, stick around and you be a teacher here. You be my Kohen instead of my son. It's better if it's you. And I'll pay you, and I'll give you clothing, I'll give you your sustenance. So the Levi agrees. Notice that the Navi keeps referring to him as the Levi. Doesn't tell us his name till the end. We know his name was Yonasan, but the Navi doesn't tell us that. So he's there, and time passes, and he's happy. And Micha's happy. And Micha says a line which we could learn a lot from. Micha says, now I know God's going to do good for me because I had a Levi to serve in my temple. Must be God's very happy with me because he sent me a Levi. And here we see how crooked a person can be. When a person wants to see signs that things are going to go well, he does. And that's what happens with Micha. Now, the Navi again stresses that there was no king, and the tribe of Dan didn't have enough space. Now, the tribe of Dan needed to expand, so they sent spies. They sent their top leaders as spies, just like Moshe Rabbeinu had, and they're going to see where they could expand. And they leave Israel for Chutz La'aretz. And on their way, they passed the house of Micha, and they had been living in Yehuda territory because they didn't have space, the tribe of Dan. So they meet the Levi, and they ask him, "How'd you get here? What you doing here?" And he tells them, "This is what Micha did for me. He hired me. I'm his priest." So they say, "Ask the gods whether we'll be successful." And he answers them in a very smart way. He says, "God is opposite you in your way that you go." This is the way all con artists answer. There's always room for interpretation. He doesn't tell them you'll succeed. He says, "God is opposite you the way you're going." They go, they come to the city of Laish. They see the people, and the people are sitting peacefully. They don't have an army ready. They don't have peace treaties with other countries. They don't have any fights with anyone. They're sitting in their own territory, and it's a beautiful territory. They come back to their tribe of Dan, and they tell them, "Guys, we got to move before someone else grabs this. And even though this isn't in the land of Israel, but it's a good land, we'll be happy there. They have no peace treaties with anyone. It's going to be an easy war, and we'll go conquer it. So let's get moving now before any other tribe hears about this, and let's go conquer it." Notice we're focusing on the tribe of Dan. This is the tribe of Shimshon. At first glance, we would assume this happened after Shimshon's death. There's no leader in the tribe of Dan. We have on tradition that this story really happened before the whole book of Shoftim begins. At the very beginning, when the first king Kushan Rishasaim takes over Jewish territory, the non-Jewish king Kushan Rishasaim, this story really happened at the beginning, and Shmuel, when he was composing the book of Shoftim, didn't want to begin with this story of how the Jewish people had idol worship in their midst, so he left it for the end. So they're traveling, and they pass Micha's house. And the five leaders tell the people, "Do you know that here there's a special temple? Let's go there." So they come to the temple, and they meet the Levi, and they ask him, "How's everything going?" And they have 600 men with their armor standing at the gates. And the five leaders go up, and they take the idol, and they take all the different the idols he had there, and the special apron he had there, and the molten thing that his mother donated. And the Levi standing there, they're on their way out, and he says, "What you guys doing?" So they say, "Be quiet, come with us, be our priest. Why should you be here for one man, his home? Better be a priest for a whole tribe." So he says, "Good idea." He takes the idols and he goes with them. Now they keep him in their midst, so now he's surrounded by armored people in front and back. And he's very happy. He's money hungry. When people would come bow to the idol, he'd often ask them, "What you guys doing? This is ridiculous." And they'd say, "What do you mean it's ridiculous?" So he'd convince them. He'd say, "Look, this idol is nonsense. You want, pay me good money and I'll wish you well and leave. But the idol is nonsense." He didn't believe in it, but he liked money. Chazal say he had on tradition that he was told from his fathers that Lolam yavod adam avodah zarah v'al yitzdech labiriyot. Person should even serve foreign service rather than need other people's donations. So he understood it to mean avodah zarah, literally foreign service, serve a foreign god, but don't need charity. And David HaMelech interviews him. When David becomes king, he calls him in and says, "Buddy, what you up to? What you doing?" So he says, "This is the tradition I have. Better serve foreign service than need charity." So David says, "No, you got it all wrong. Avodah Zarah means take on a foreign service, meaning you've been a carpenter your whole life. You can't find a job in carpentry. Go be a shoemaker. Take a job that's unfamiliar for you. Do something that's foreign to you rather than need charity. Don't say, 'Well, I'm a carpenter. There's no work in carpentry now, so gee, give me charity.' No, take service even that's foreign to you rather than take charity. That's the tradition you had. You got it all wrong." So the guy says, "Fine." So David HaMelech sees that he's very good with money. So David appoints him as his treasurer. He doesn't kill him, even though he's been leading a whole tribe to idol worship. And then ultimately the guy goes back to idol worship. I mean, as the story goes on, this guy must have lived a few hundred years to live till David HaMelech's time, but that's a tradition we have. So Micha hears about this, and Micha starts running after them. And Micha gathers his men and they catch up to the tribe of Dan. And they call out and they say, what's going on here? So the tribe of Dan turns around and says, Micha, what are you getting so excited about? You understand what they're saying. You know what it means when you turn around with a gun and say, what are you getting so excited about? Basically you're saying, don't get so excited, I got a gun. So Micha doesn't get the hint. Micha says, you took my God that I made, you took my coin, you guys went, what'd you leave me with? What do you mean, what am I getting all excited about? So they tell him, don't speak so loudly, shh. There are people here who are bitter, you never know what they might do, we don't want you to get hurt. You don't want to die, you don't want your family members to die. And they continue traveling. Micha sees that if he takes them on, they're going to war anyways. They're much stronger than him. So Micha turns around and goes back home. And they come to the city of Laish. And the city of Laish wasn't prepared for war. So they destroy the city. They burn the city down. And they take over that city to be their territory. And they name the city Dan, after their great-great-grandfather Dan. And they erect that idol and they set up Yehonasan to be their priest, him and his children. And the Navi says they were priests in the tribe of Dan till the Jewish people were exiled from the land and this needs work. What does that mean? Throughout David HaMelech's time there was idol worship in the tribe of Dan. Shlomo let such a thing be. So different commentaries explain this is a different period. Was it the exile? Was it the time that we lost at Shiloh? Which period is this a reference to? So they erected this idol throughout for years this idol was there. And Chazal say about this period, we say, Lecha Hashem HaTzedakah Velanu Bosh Tapanim. God, you're righteous and we are ashamed. We went to war with an idol in our midst. The tribe of Dan takes an idol in their midst and they go to war to conquer territory outside the land of Israel. And God lets them win the war. Lecha Hashem HaTzedakah, you Hashem are righteous. Velanu, and we, what do we have to say for ourselves? Boshet HaPanim, we should be embarrassed. And that's been true throughout our history. God's gone 10 steps ahead of us, helping us out, even when we did wrong. And this is an example of that. That's the story of Pesel Micha. And the book of Shoftim really concludes with a story that is even more difficult than the story of Pesel Micha. The story known as the story of Pilegesh Bagiva. And this is a story that we could really spend a few months on, studying the story. So we will try to do the story in short. We'll begin the story this week and conclude the story of Bezrat Hashem with a siyum, with pizza and stuff next week. And with that, we'll conclude the book of Shoftim. Again, this story begins stressing the fact that there was no king. And as we go through the story, we'll understand why that is stressed here. There was a Levi who lived near the mountainous region of Ephraim. And he married a woman as a Pilegesh, meaning they weren't as bound to one another as a husband and wife are. She and he agreed to live together, but that if they separate, he doesn't have to pay her ksuba money. That's the agreement. They're loyal to one another, they live together, he is Mekadesh, they do Kiddushin, but there doesn't have to be ksuba at the end. He doesn't have to pay her money. If they decide to separate, each goes his own way, they get divorced, but he won't have obligations to her, she won't have obligations to him, they could separate with less obligations than a married woman, and that's the concept of a Pilegesh, which means plag isha, like half a wife, because she doesn't get the same status as a wife. And the Navi says she was unfaithful to him. How was she unfaithful? So there's a discussion among the sages what she did that was unfaithful. Either she wasn't careful enough, there was a fly in the soup, he found a fly in the soup and he got upset, or else Chazal say something else, and she left him. He got upset at her. He got upset. She goes back to her father's house. She goes to Beis Lechem. And she spends 4 months there. And after 4 months, he comes after her. And he wants to convince her to come back. He takes a lad, he takes a pair of donkeys, and he comes to. She isn't quick to agree to come back. She brings him to her father's house. And when her father sees that the guy came, he greets him warmly. He's very happy with him. Chazal tell us that this man was pious. On the surface, the man doesn't seem to be such a positive character. For some reason, we have on tradition that he was. So we have to be careful how we analyze the story. His father-in-law tells him, stick around. Maybe he was concerned for the shalom bias. Maybe he wanted to make sure they were still getting along. So he sticks around for 3 days. They eat, they drink, they're on vacation. Comes the fourth day, he gets up early, and he says, I gotta go. So the father-in-law says, come, have breakfast with us, and then you'll go. They sit down to eat, the father-in-law and the son-in-law, and he gives them to drink. And then he says, you know what? Sleep over one more night. You'll feel good. The guy says, no, I gotta go. The father-in-law insists. Fine. He stays another night. He gets up early on the fifth day to go. And the father-in-law says, have a meal. Wait a little bit till it's sunny. They eat. The guy gets up to go with his wife, with the lad. And his father-in-law says, look, it's getting late. Stay one more night. Just sleep over here. You'll feel well tomorrow morning. You'll get up early. You'll go. And the guy says, no. And he gets up to go. And he's traveling. And he reaches the city of Jerusalem, which is referred to as the city that is inhabited by the Yevusi. Now that's an indication that this story really happened before the whole book of Shoftim, because at the very beginning of the book of Shoftim, we conquered the city of Jerusalem. So that's why we have on tradition that this story also occurred at the beginning of Shoftim, over a century before it's written, meaning it's not in correct chronological order. But again, Shmuel did not want to begin the book of Shoftim with this story, so he left it for the end. So the man is traveling, and he reaches a city that has non-Jews in it. And it's getting pretty late. So the lad says, let's go sleep over there. And the man says, we're not going to go to a non-Jewish city. Let's go over to that hilltop. And they approach the hilltop, and the sun is setting. And that hilltop is a hilltop that belongs to the tribe of Binyamin. They come to the city, and no one invites them home. And we have on tradition that it was Friday night. It was Shabbos morning. It was Shabbos that night. And no one's inviting them in. So we start seeing improper traits on this hilltop that belongs to the tribe of Binyamin. There was a man who came from the same city he came, also from Har Ephraim, an old man, who was coming home in the evening from his work in the field. And he asks him, where are you coming from? Where are you going? So he says, we're coming from Beis Lechem. We're going to the mountaintop of Ephraim. That's where I'm from. And I went to Beit Lechem, but I'm on my way back. And no one's inviting me in. And I have everything I need. I have food for me. I have food for the for the girl. I have food for the lad. I have food for the animals. I'm not missing anything. I just need a rooftop over my head. So the old man says, peace to you. Whatever you need is on me. Don't sleep in the street. Come home with me. He brings him home. He gives him food for the donkeys. He gives them to wash. They eat. They drink. They're having a nice Shabbos meal. And suddenly the people of the city surround the house. And they start banging on the door. And they yell at the old man and they say, give over the man who came to your house. We want to know him, biblically. And the old man goes out and he says, my brothers, don't be evil. This man came to my house. Don't do such a disgraceful act. I have a virgin daughter. He has the Pilegesh with him. I'll take them out. If you want to afflict them, do what's good in your eyes, but don't do such a disgraceful act to the man. And the people refuse. So they're approaching the house. The house is surrounded, and they're not about to succumb. They're approaching. And the old man is there, and the man is inside the house, and he knows they're approaching. And we'll have to continue next week.